Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Welcome to Faith Conversations, everyone. A favorite guest of mine is back, and you've come to know her because she's been on several times on Faith Conversations, Kathy Escobar. Kathy is co-pastor of The Refuge, a Christian community and mission in North Denver. She's a trained spiritual director and group facilitator, and you've heard me talking with her here on the podcast about her book Faith Shift, about her book Practicing more recently. Today we're going to be talking about A Weary World, Reflections for a Blue Christmas. This is an Advent devotional that is available now. So a big welcome back to the podcast to Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
It's so good to get to hang out with you again.
Always fun. Always good to talk with you. And I was delighted when I saw A Weary World advertised online, Reflections for a Blue Christmas. Delighted, you know, how do you say delighted about an Advent devotional that is about the topic that you have tackled? But for those who do not know, last Christmas was the very first one, and you say this in the book, that you ever dreaded. You know, Christmas, there are different reasons that we don't look forward to it, but for some, dysfunction is often that reason, etc. But for you, it was the tragic loss of your college sophomore son to suicide. No warning, etc. And that happened how long before last Christmas?
He died on October 28th of 2019.
Wow.
And so right coming into this season, and his birthday is November 11th. So
wow.
We just like went, and then, you know, his birthday and then Thanksgiving and
then Christmas.
And the irony for me related to Blue Christmas stuff is that at The Refuge, we have been hosting Blue Christmas space for over 10 years.
Wow.
In our community. Our community is 14 and a half years old. And the reason why is, you know, we're a Christian community and mission center that holds a lot of space. We're really a healing hub for healing community and social action. And there's just a lot of pain, a lot of loneliness, a lot of grief around the holidays.
Sure.
A lot of pain in dysfunctional, unhealthy families.
Yeah.
Darkness in the sky, you
yes.
know, just less light.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been hosting that all these years. We do a contemplative night with collaborative stations and that really just honor all the feelings. But I personally never felt them. I did for my friends, and I love any contemplative space.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to enter in that way. It's always healing for me. And it wasn't only for the grief of Christmas. That wasn't the only thing that Blue Christmas was about. But on the whole, that's what it was for.
Yeah.
And last year, oh my goodness, for the first time, I really understood that dread.
Oh, and could it, yeah. And this being a service and a practice that your faith community regularly, annually held. I mean, how did you even partake? I mean, were you a part of the leadership at that point, or could you even be?
Yeah, for us, I mean, and this is the interesting part about this particular project, is that it's Practicing released February 18th of 2020. But it wrapped up and went into production right that same week that Jared died.
Wow.
And so they held it. It didn't go further.
Yeah.
And actually right in this time frame that I'm talking to you now, a year ago, I had to fold his death into practicing in whatever small ways I could. And
I remember that actually, because we talked a little bit about that here on the podcast.
And so thankful for that opportunity, because I can't even imagine it being in the world without being able to say that truth. So, yeah. But I didn't get a chance to really do much with it because I was just barely breathing.
Right.
And so just really a few weeks before, I think I was supposed to have a conversation about it. Like that week was Westminster John Knox had asked me if I was interested in doing an Advent 2020 project, this project. Mm. And then of course, you know, everything, I'm in trauma. I'm not even thinking about anything. And in January, I just was like, let's just revisit, like, where is that at? I got to get my head on
right.
a little bit what was out there. And they hadn't made a next plan. And so we had a conference call and I said, I only have one idea. And I only have one idea. And it doesn't matter to me if it's this year or another time, but I only have one thing in me, and it is Blue Christmas. And they were amazing. They said, let's do it. But I need you to understand, this is in January of 2020. This is before coronavirus. Wow. And so it was so helpful for me to work on this project, because it helped me process yes. some of what, because even at our Blue Christmas, I couldn't really go
no.
there.
Well, that's, you know, what I we was did thinking. Do it. If you no. were in some sort of leadership with it, how, you know, it's really hard.
I came, I went. Yeah, we are very collaborative. So the Refuge, it doesn't rely only on me. Yeah. I mean, we've nurtured a lot of things. So I did go.
Okay.
And it was actually really healing for me and good. But I still was so, you know, everything.
Yeah.
So when I started to write, though, I'll say this, earlier this year, it was so healing for me. It was so helpful.
Wow.
But then I turned this manuscript in on March 13th.
No way. No way.
When all the dominoes fell.
Absolutely. My husband was out of town in Chicago the day that the Major League Baseball shut down, the day all these shutdowns, and he was trying to fly back. He was able to fly back. He had just done a funeral, a memorial that had over 250 people at it, and of course came back home and thinking, wow, I wonder if I've been exposed, you know, all of that. But you had turned this manuscript in with no mention of the pandemic in it, because you'd written it before you knew this.
Yeah. So this is a little piece, is that the Refuge kind of knew something was brewing. We have some really smart people who are scientists and in public health people. And so we knew we were planning on something but it was nothing like what happened. So the joke was, I mean, I was out of the country and on a spring break with my kids trying to redeem. I mean, you know, we're just in the thick of it.
Right.
That was just
grieving
5 months
still.
Later.
Oh, yeah.
And four and a half months later. And so, but what was fascinating is that the title was A Weary World. It came from my friend in a conversation. That's how we landed on that title. And the world was weary before March 13th.
For sure.
Absolutely. And then now just moving forward. So we were able to add a few things in, and the idea was that this was only a 2020 thing, you know,
right.
So it doesn't probably have all the things about everything related, but I really, all the things kind of were already in play. Racial tension, that is huge, big shift culturally in all the right ways, social action wise, and how tiring, but how important the work is.
And I read you did talk about the pandemic. You make mention of it in here. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you were able to, because you said, you know, at the time of the writing of this, because this to me is a perennial book. This is an Advent devotional, in my mind anyway, that people will come back to. Can come back to year after year, and certainly recommend to someone that we know who has suffered a loss or is struggling in life. That I can see me just recommending this to people year after year. And so I love that.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely so. Because loss is a part of life. It is just an inevitable part of life. We don't know what those losses are going to look like. We don't know how deep they're going to go. We don't know how close to us they're going to be, whether it's going to be loss of life, a child, loss, a of a job, loss, you know, you can fill in the blank about the different types of losses, but loss is inevitable. And often it will strike us, it will impact us in ways unexpected. I think that's the other piece. Maybe you, I'm sure you can speak to that. I mean, there are certain expectations when you lose someone in your family, and you add on that a child, and even when a loss is expected, someone who's suffering from a debilitating disease and their death is imminent, there's still that sadness and loss. But when it's unexpected, then there's a whole other layer of things. But loss is a part of life, and we all respond differently depending on what it is and when it happens, right?
That's so true. And I mean, that's the breadth. And it's, what's really important to me about this project is that while I touch on the loss of Jared for sure, and it helped me engage with some things related to him, it's really not about just death. It really is just about the realities of humanity and how typically in this season, which is ironic, to be honest, if you consider the Jesus story, that there's so many things that just don't address that people are not feeling it when it comes to kind of fa-la-la, you know, joy to the world. They're just not feeling it. And because of real life and those losses, this year is a year, 2020 for sure, has had more significant loss globally.
Yeah.
You know, so many people because of coronavirus. But the truth is that this has been going on since the beginning of time, and we pretty much suck at grief. Ugh. And we suck at pain, and we suck at holding space for people's real stories. And it's because it's hard. And so we want to skip over, we want to compartmentalize, we want happy stories, and then it would be
Hallmark movies.
Yes, and they make us feel good. And I know a lot of people are watching Christmas movies earlier, which is good because the world does need positive things.
I actually watched one this past week, which is not so much like me, but I did.
Yeah, and it's really true. In fact, Jose and I have been, that's my husband, we've been watching Ted Lasso. On Apple Plus, and it really is an amazing show because it is really positive, but it's really real also. And I think that part, we just need goodness and sweetness.
Yes.
But related to Blue Christmas, I mean, I think that's what I really like about the spaces we've created for all these years. And also what's in here is that it's really is hopeful. To be honest, it creates hope, and people need it for their bodies, and they need to release things, and they need it for their souls. So for years and years, even though I wasn't really suffering at the holiday because of loss, I have a lot of big feelings about church and life and patriarchy and a lot of things, and we have always had an ornament smashing station at the refuge all these years. It's like cornerstone.
You know what? That is amazing.
Oh my gosh. Wow. It's so helpful. And people, like some people, that's like their favorite thing. Not everybody loves it. It's one of my most favorite. And then usually at the very end, I do all the ones that are left over if there are any. Sometimes they're all gone. And we ride on them. And we have a whole thing about how anger is not a sin. And anger is a propelling and important emotion. And in the church, I'm just going to say, like, they suck at anger. We're feeling it. And so to give a chance to embody something, and I'll tell you, like, you know, getting your arm back and then throwing it and that feeling of release and it's smashing. We write on them. We write things.
Oh, totally.
And
oh, man,
it's amazing.
This is great. Years ago when a radio show that I did was ended, you know, canceled, our producer took a mug from the radio show into the stairwell and just smashed it and then swept it all up. But she said, you wouldn't believe how freeing and how great that was to do that.
This is the body part.
That's amazing.
It's really powerful.
But I had never heard, yeah, the body part. Thank you for mentioning that. I had never thought about Christmas ornaments. So this past week, or a week and a half at the max, I was in a conversation with my mother, who loves Christmas, just loves it. And I said to her, I felt bad saying it, but this is how I feel. I said, Christmas is a burden to me. Mm. Because it feels like a burden. I don't come to it sad. There are parts of it that I like. I have to think, what are those parts? I just wish it, you know, it's a burden when I think of all the gift buying and the stuff. And my husband used to get depressed this time of year. He doesn't as much anymore, but I'm not, you know, I'm not over the top with it because, you know, I don't want to be, can't be, I'm not going to sell our souls for Christmas gifts, you know, but
it's become a grind for a lot of people. And everyone just wants to skip over it. It's like, can we just, you know, and in the refuge community, we start feeling it right before Thanksgiving and even a little bit Halloween, like right after Halloween, but for sure Thanksgiving to New Year's.
Well,
and that's the shift that happens for a lot of folks.
I totally is. And I'm also going to say that it's no surprise why each year you hear more people say, I love Thanksgiving more. I'll hear more people say, I just love Thanksgiving the most. You know, if we could just stop there. And, you know, it has nothing to do with Jesus. That's not why I'm, it's a grind. And of course, it has nothing to do with Jesus, why it is a grind, you know, in my life.
This is a piece of it. I mean, really,
right. If all I had to buy was three gifts, thank you, wise men, which, you know, that's just not even exactly what happened, of course. But if that's all I had to buy, it wouldn't be a grind.
It's so true. And then just all the, you know, all the busy, all the frantic, all the, you know, for sure the realities of family things. And this has really escalated over the past couple of years. People have felt it for a long time, but because of big dissonance between political persuasions and conversations and, you know, like everybody, I feel like more than ever have just truly dreaded these gatherings.
That's like one of the few gifts. There are some to coronavirus. I said to my husband, I said, you know, there are certain relatives that I won't have to even dread the idea of politics coming up at the table because
we all won't be together. Right. Yeah, no, it's really true. But it also points to, especially this year, and that's why I'm glad that this book came out this year, was everyone's feeling so disconnected and fragmented and exhausted from Zoom and lonely and missing touch.
And the chaos in the political scene, we're also just, you know, shoulders like hunched forward.
Right. And we don't get those releases, you know, because actually gathering for the good gatherings, which they happen to, like, it's just helpful because you're connected. And now to do the cold and, you know, in some parts of the world and certainly the United States, it's winter and the weather's hard. And, you know, and then on top of, even Jose and I were saying, like, daylight savings time is hard on our soul. It's like 4:45 and it feels like 9:00. And so like, and we're totally like, how do we make it to bedtime? You know? And I think so many people are feeling that, extra now because we're in our houses more. It's just a bizarre year.
That's one of the benefits of living in Florida. You know, I'm realizing, wow, if my husband and I were back in Chicago, we'd be inside already. I was so grateful that there was a reprieve this past week and last week, 2 weeks ago now, a really warm weather that, you know, came their way to the Midwest and a little bit the Northeast. But, you know, that's a reprieve is all it is. Right. Everyone from whichever latitude and longitude up is going in for the winter. And I'm really grateful that we're still able to, you know, sit outside at a coffee shop, at a restaurant, et cetera, because with coronavirus, that all changes with everyone having to be inside,
right.
You know? And so my heart really goes, yes, my heart goes out to everyone living in a cold weather climate this year above all years.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Well, boy, this is a real upper of a podcast, isn't it? But
hey, it's just reality.
It's reality and it's important. So, I mean, I think I want to say those two things. Kathy, I want to ask you, one of the things that you, or one of the ways that you have broken down this devotional is into themes, major themes that really do honor reality. Talk about the themes that are represented in A Weary World.
Yeah, so there are 4 weeks in Advent. You know, those of us from the Christian tradition who follow that know that and kind of prepare ourselves for that rhythm. But this book is not only for people who practice that. It really is for anybody. Some people have already just read it like a book, you know?
Oh, totally. So, yes, I get
and
that.
So, but it is structured that way. It is 28 days, divided into 4 weeks with a little longer reflection on the first day and a little wrap up at the end and then 5 shorter ones. But the 4 movements, and this just came to me, you know, when I knew, and this is a thing kind of about writing or where you're focused, like it just came after that conversation with the editor, was just these movements of honoring reality, practicing honesty, embracing paradox, and borrowing hope. And then ending on Christmas Eve with God with us. Mm. And that was from a piece that I had written years and years ago on Christmas Eve. And it really is centered on, you know, regardless of how much my faith has unraveled and shifted and deconstructed and changed, you know, there was like, that was my one thing that really remained for me, was Emmanuel, God with us. And so those 4 movements are what make up A Weary World, and just trying to kind of walk through those, that we have our true stories and they're all different. Everyone's reality is different.
Yeah.
And honor it.
Yeah, I like that. And that's so true. My dad passed away a year ago last May, and my mom more recently was talking with me, and she said, honestly, this is the second year, the second set of holidays and birthdays and all of that. She goes, this is harder than the first year. And I hadn't shared with her yet that that's what many, you'll read that many places, psychologists will say that. I thought, maybe if I don't tell her that, it won't be. But of course it was. It is, you know? Right. And so, and what is it too about new griefs that come into our lives that point back to other griefs that either haven't been fully grieved or just are reminders of earlier griefs? And I mean, that's also a part of how we move forward in the world. It's a looking forward and a looking back, constantly, both.
Always. And there really isn't. I mean, one thing, I mean, I'm just a baby in grief, really. I mean, I'm just past year, the 1 year. And the truth is that I, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she said this also. She said, you misunderstood me. These are not linear. And so we have made the stages of grief super linear. And so when people say moving through grief, I'm like, there's no such thing. There's learning to roll with and to move with and to travel through rhythms of it, but it's here to stay. And so a lot of people, this is really common. And you're listening to people, they feel bad for feeling hard things this long later, or, you know, it's, I thought I was through that. And I think it's because we were taught this really linear model of grief.
Well,
instead of just owning that we're going to hit it spiral, we're going to hit it over and over, always at a different place. We're going to hit it over and over, and we don't know what we're going to feel like. And there's no rules. You know, that's one thing. Grief has no rules. And that hashtag has been my hashtag since last year. And it's so hard because we have these unintentional, like we put it on ourselves and then the world puts it on us. The grief should look a certain way. And then just all only counting that, you know, loss of a person is grief. Well, loss of faith as we knew it, loss of dreams, loss of health, loss of humans, loss of what we thought, loss of relationships and friendships, loss of capacity to do things that we used to do, all kinds of things are, they're things to grieve. loss of the hope in things happening in the world and in humanity. I mean, those are big things that stir up a lot of things, and we're not supposed to sort of feel all the feelings and then be in a different place. We have to learn. That's why practicing honesty, that second week, is so important, because it just is actually, we just talk about some of the big feelings and, you know, fear and anger and shame and sadness and confusion and doubt. And those things are just real human experiences. And I think learning how to own them more naturally instead of try and master them, yes, and figure them out in our head.
I don't know, maybe somewhere in the book you quote Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I don't know, but there was something that you said in early on in week one that I grabbed onto, and I actually wrote in the margin, linear thinking does not work, and hadn't even mentioned it. But I wanted to say, you mentioned in our society, I think we've been hugely taught it in church. If you do A plus B, yeah, it equals C. You raise a kid like this and do this, and they're going to come out just fine. Well, that's a load of hooey. Linear thinking, the law, I remember Larry Crabb saying that so many years ago. I wish people had listened. The law of linear thinking, it doesn't work. There's nothing formulaic to life, let alone to grief. And societally, we are so, and the church is no different. I'm sad about that. We are always pressing people to just move past, get quickly. Let's right. get, because we're uncomfortable, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know the
so
why,
true.
But right.
And it is. I mean, that is one thing. This is before this project, years and years ago. My friend Phyllis Mathis, who I do Walking Wounded, which is hope for people who've been hurt by church and ministry, she shared something about, like, we know we're in trouble whenever we kind of say, I just need to figure it out.
Ooh,
because it's in our brain. It's in our mind. And so, and usually it's like, to solve the dissonance, I need to figure it out in my head. And that really matters of the soul and matters of the heart and of the deeper story. There's things that are just not figure outable. And we want to, as humans, it's our tendency, but to learn how to, and this is a piece in A Weary World is, you know, my son's had a tattoo. He was really into philosophy, and it said, I don't know. And it came, you know, it's attributed to Socrates, and, you know, Plato, it's all in that stream, but, and no one has the exact quote, but it is, I know that I don't know.
Yeah.
I know more than you because I know that I don't know.
Yeah.
And that there are some things that you just don't know. And we hate that. And,
oh, yeah,
and learning how to let go. And that's why embracing paradox is such an important thing and so underrated in most all of our systems.
Yes.
Because it likes one or the other.
Yes.
It doesn't know how to have contradictory things in the same space. But for most humans, we're all just living paradoxes, and our stories are paradoxical. And our experiences, the world is paradoxical, every human is. And I think that learning how to embrace paradox is really healing.
Oh, preach. You can preach that all day. That is absolutely true. Oh, my goodness. Also, I think one of the things that I'm a big person to pay attention to the kinds of questions that people ask in books like these, and in any books at the end of chapters. And, you know, if they're the kind of the Pollyanna, easy, quick, fill in the blank questions, I don't have any time for the book. You're on the podcast, so obviously they're not Pollyanna, quick, easy answer, you know, fill in the blank questions. I mean, questions at the ends of entries, as you said, there are more questions at the end of the larger section at the beginning of each week. But like even day one, Monday, of the first week of Advent, the end of the entry, what's smelly, noisy, bloody, and painful in your life right now? Yeah. I mean,
lots.
Thank you. Thank you for asking a question like that, right? We need questions like that asked, not, you know, what made you feel good this week? What made you feel bad? And I'm all for the examine, a wonderful spiritual practice, life-giving, life-draining, however you want to. But you know, you really, you dig in and ask some questions about emotions. We're not, you know, I want to move past that. I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. Emotions, I can tell you yours, but wait, what about mine? I don't know. I don't want to mess with that. Right. I don't want to have to figure that out.
Well, I just think in general, we hate being human. And we don't want to be human. And we are humans. And so I think that's a piece for me of a weary world. It's just a little bit of just in practicing is this way also. It's just embracing that we're just flawed, beautiful, amazing, struggling humans. And gain, just like, let's learn how to embrace the human experience. And I honestly think that this is where church and some rigid systems were to get the humanness out of us. And that instead of like honoring, and honestly, I mean, that's why that story is at the beginning of the book, is that that's the Christmas story. And so we just don't like the upside down ways of Jesus. And we really just, we like to focus on always rising above instead of going down into real life. This is real life. And I think there's hope in it. There's hope in the Mass. It's beautiful. That's why borrowing hope is really important to me, that that's week 4. But it's not a false hope. It's not a happy-dappy, you know.
Yeah.
It's a deeper hope that actually comes out of the earth. And it comes out of the shared human experience. And the shared human experience is there's a lot of pain and suffering, and there's a lot of love and joy and peace.
And don't you think we kind of forget about the humanity of Jesus? I mean, the whole point is Jesus coming as a human and, you know, whatever, however we get the story, you know, laying in a feeding trough with piles of crap all around, you know, that's, I mean, what a metaphor for our lives.
Yeah. You know? This is image that I use for my friend, David Hayward, Naked Pastor, is one of my favorite, you know, cartoonists and artists. It says it all, you know. Yes. It's like the important people weren't there. And dirty and smelly, and the oddballs and the weirdos and the people who were not accepted in the echelons of high society and were scorned are actually the ones where all the action is.
I love that. I mean, gosh, just sit with that for all of Advent and there you go. I mean, that, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. I looked at this, that image, in week 1, and it's like if you're into spiritual practices, like a Visio Divina. I mean, just, it's marvelous. All right. One of the things I want to get to, cause I can get mired in all of this really good stuff that we're talking about, but I want people to know, ways in which they can use this book. I mean, certainly you can use it as an individual. That's what I'm going to do. But you can use it in a group setting. Because you have things in the back, that talk about, how to do this, you know, for ministry leaders, caring for people experiencing a blue Christmas. I'll let you talk about what you kind of offer by ways to use this.
Yeah. So in the end of each week, I mean, there's a little question on the each daily reflection, but at the end of each week, there are some group reflection questions. I mean, they can be used personally, but always for me, I think it's so great to talk with people if possible.
Yes.
And then there are actually things to practice. I do believe in embodiment, and sometimes that's just in words, but usually there's some things we could practice for that particular week, and then there's a short prayer. So that's at the end of each of the 4 weeks. But in the very back, there are kind of three things. And one is just Blue Christmas resources. And so like if you are planning some kind of gathering online or in person, like we're moving our Blue Christmas gathering outside this year. And we're going to use nature as our stations. I mean, normally people contribute. We probably have about 7 or 8 stations. Anger is one of them. Usually we have fire. We can't have fire because the fire is in Colorado this year.
Right.
But we're going to do a different kind of fire that works in a different way. But we are going to use nature and be outside because of coronavirus.
Yes.
But some of these things can be in smaller settings if people are indoors in some safe way. And then they can also be for future years, and they can also be online. And so the idea is that the resources are there for communities that want to create spaces. The other thing is, as ministry leaders, what helps and what hurts. And I think this one is like a must read, just in general, because what happens is, and I think for ministry leaders, and, you know, I've been pastoring for a long time, and I'm grateful. I'm in a different kind of community than a lot of people live in. But the truth is you just get bogged down and you're charging forward. And Christmas is one of the biggest nights of the year and all kinds of things, Christmas Eve. And there's a missing of what's actually happening in humans, in good. Your community this That's time good. Of year. And yes. so there's something, I think, for ministry leaders, what helps and what hurts. And then for sure for family members and friends who are excited, like your mom who loves the holidays. And so there's lots of people, and I really want to honor that. Like, not everybody is suffering this season. Right. I mean, more people are in 2020 because of coronavirus, but in general, there's people love the holiday. They love Hallmark movies. They love decorating. They love baking. They love doing new things. I never want to diminish somebody's joy.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for saying that.
I want to honor that, but I think folks need to understand that the people that they're living with, that they love, their friends, are hurting, and not everybody is feeling that. And this tendency to shut it down is really unhelpful. And that's why people don't like to share, because they get met with, you know, trust God. Oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year. You know, oh, find some joy, you know, tried answers, things that are not helpful. And so there's a piece in there about that. And that was a really important part of the project for me. And then the other thing I would say is Westminster John Knox has done an incredible job of creating downloadable digital resources for faith communities. And I can give you the link. You might already have it, but in the show notes, maybe share it.
Because yes, I will. That's
they created slides and ideas and some graphics and some different things, because the thought is, and what I hope, and I've been hearing from some communities who are traveling through the material together, they're going to over the 4 weeks of Advent, and then using Sundays for those that do gather on Sundays for a service, using the major themes in sermon. So that's all available too. And I think what it, like the sum total of that is, this can just be read. If that's all you can do this year, do that. But for people that want a little bit more juice, that juice is there if you want to use it.
Hey, also, you had mentioned, I don't think you've said it here on the podcast yet, but something online, December 8th.
Yeah, so and we're really excited about this. Yeah, and this kind of came out of, honestly, coronavirus has shown us that we have tools that weren't maybe used as much, that now we rely on, like, Zoom. And so we are creating, so we, the Refuge has always done a Blue Christmas. We usually do it the first or second Wednesday in December. And so we're still going to, as I mentioned, outside, even us, I mean, we're small and we just don't want to bring people inside. Yeah. It's really spiking here and it's not a good idea, but being outside for a short period of time, it's such social distance event anyway, in normal, because it's super reflective. It's not sitting together and singing or anything. But I got this idea that it would be the perfect time, because so many people are hurting this year, to create a Blue Christmas online gathering. And so my friend Lily Lewin from Nashville, and Christine Sein from Washington, Joanna Cummings from Nashville, we have been working together to create, and other people are involved, musicians and artists and some different folks that we're pulling in for a collaborative evening on Zoom on Tuesday, December 8th. And it's free. But you have to register, because there's some things to bring and a link and all that. Yeah. And so Christine Sein's GodSpaceLight.com site is they're handling the registration. And it's going to be like a 90-minute experience online. And we're actually going to do the four major movements in a weary world, but it's not a weary world thing, but it is a Blue Christmas experience. Music, art, community, hope.
Love this.
An experiential, there'll be like reflective time, and people can enter however works for them from the comfort of their home.
Wonderful. So I will have the link in the show notes, everyone. So just You know, you can find those show notes wherever you download the podcast. If you stream it from my website, it'll be right there at anitalustria.com as well. So yeah, don't miss that. That's December 8th. And that's why, Kathy, I wanted to talk to you in November. I feel like I'm always late to the game, elevating the thought of Advent and Advent resources to people, like way too late in the month of November, so people can't get things in their hands soon enough, etc. And when this came across my desk, I thought I had to talk to you. This really is the year for a book, an Advent resource called A Weary World, Reflections for a Blue Christmas. And you're the person to write it. I wish you weren't, you know?
Me too.
I wish you weren't.
Yeah,
but
me
thank
too.
You. Yeah.
But it's been a really healing project for me. Good. And okay. It helped me articulate some things that just for me, I didn't have a chance to.
Yeah.
And, you know, like all writing, you know this, you know, things change, but what's in here and what is in here isn't just me. It's really a collaborative work of 10 years in my little wild, beautiful faith community of trying to create a space where people yes. could do this and have it be a natural rhythm, not yes. just, you know, something for those people, but
yeah.
for like all of us to have mm-hmm. a space where you could come and just mm. Feel feels. And smash some ornaments. It's
and
really
smash
healing.
Some ornaments.
Burn some
I love
stuff.
It. I love it. Oh, Kathy Escobar, always a delight, a treat to talk with you, have you on the podcast. Thank you so much.
I always love hanging out with you. So take care. So fun to be with you today.
Thank you. Again, A Weary World, Reflections for a Blue Christmas. And to everyone, as always, I say keep the conversation going.